Mr. Shara, a man I know, I like, and I admire, a man that has sold to me, a man that has inspired me. I'm very lucky to have you on the podcast today. How are you, Shara?
I'm doing great, and wow, that's I need you on every single one of my calls if that's my intro. No, appreciate you. Excited to be here.
I'll follow you around and I'll say lovely things around you. So I first met you. I can't remember how it come about. I don't know if you reached out to me or I think did you reach out to me?
I honestly can't remember. It might have been you on LinkedIn or something. I reached out. Yeah, something
Yeah,
passive, but
and
yeah.
we sat a demo and I thought this guy, when it comes to selling, that a lot of I said a lot of demos for tech stuff, and I'm going to say it, especially with Americans, and there's a bit of me that with American tech sales, I get quite annoyed because it's very like pushy, ram it down your throat. Whereas you were just so cool, Mr. Smooth. But listen, we're getting carried away. Shara, I'm going to hit you with the same question that I ask everybody. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
That's deep. I am a father of two. My name is Shara Davuti. At home, I solve the problem of making it to 8 p.m. In my work, I help organizations have more conversations in less time. Typically, 3 to 5x conversations on phone calls than what you guys were previously doing. And I work for a company called Nooks. We're a conversation platform slash dialer slash virtual sales floor slash data enrichment. There's a lot, but I'm already feature dumping. But yeah, that's me. I'm Shara Davuti.
And well, so let's go back a little bit. So we sat on this demo, and you were showing us a platform. And one of my favorite things about you was you just went, "Oh, do you want me to just show you how it works right now?" And you just pulled it up. And I don't know if it was because it was like 5 a.m. in the morning or it was something silly, but you just started rocking out the cold calls. And I thought, this guy, the cojones, he's got the confidence. He's
Yeah.
brave. So talk to me. How did you end up in tech sales? Like, how did you end up there?
I have a very interesting background. And I say interesting because I'm relatively new to tech sales, maybe going on 3 years now. But before that, I've done everything from, my parents had restaurants, so working in the restaurant industry, at school, for my university, I would have to go to different high schools and like recruit people to come to my community college. And then after that, I worked in real estate. I dabbled in law enforcement for a little as well. So there's,
Wow.
yeah, all over the place. But ultimately, when my son was born, I was driving 2.5 hours one way to get to the office for my real estate property management company. So 4 to 5 hours a day in the car traveling. And I completely missed the first year of my son's life. Like some days I would leave early. He wasn't awake. I would come back. He was already sleeping. And I was like, yeah, this just isn't it. Obviously working on the weekends and really pushed myself to make a change to join tech because honestly, the weekends were off. And then I didn't even know about all the benefits. I wish I made the move earlier. But yeah, that's my story. I've done basically everything under the sun, door knocking sales, and which has probably helped me succeed in my current role right now as well. Yeah.
So one of the age-old debates when it comes to salespeople is some people are natural-born sellers and some people have to work very, very hard to get good. You're a very calm, cool, collected man. What camp did you fall into?
Oh man, yeah. I think I'm right in the middle of a little bit of both, but I definitely work really hard. I come from a sports background. I've played college sports. So when it comes to 1% better every day, win or lose, like there's something to learn. Like I really have that mentality. And you probably see the Kobe book back there. Mamba mentality is my like slogan that I always live by as well. So I think you could definitely learn. And I want to say a lot of what I do just comes from repetition and practice and feeling confident in what I'm doing. So yeah, you could definitely learn.
And do you follow like a set methodology? Like what does that look like for you?
Okay, so the loaded question here, but as far as discovery calls and stuff like that, med pick is something that, or medic, there's different variations of this, right? And then just setting the tone, using an upfront contract on the first couple sentences that you're using. Hey, this is my agenda. Anything you want to add to it when we get to the end? you know, if this doesn't work out, no problem, nothing personal. Like, I always mention this just to create a safe space. Because, Jack, I'm sure you know, like, a lot of times people just say, yeah, this is interesting, or whatever the case is, right? And then we're playing the chase game. But I try to say, like, just let me know. I'm not going to hound you with 49 different objection handlings or whatever. If you, you know, I'll push one or two. But if you truly tell me, hey, this isn't for you, which a lot of the times my questions, I will be the ones to say, hey, this isn't for you, right? Or whatever the case is. And so I think just building that trust factor, something that you touched on earlier, is pivotal, especially in our business. Yeah.
Talk to me about balancing your work and life. You're a father. You work hard.
Yeah.
You have conversations with people in different countries. How do you balance all of that?
It's really, really tough. I think, you know, my wife plays a big role in giving me the freedom to be able to do this. And ultimately, unfortunately, right now in my situation, work does trump a lot of the things, but I try to start early and end a little bit earlier than most in the US time zone, if you will. So definitely by 3:30, 4 p.m. my time, PST, I'm logged off. But I'll also log in at, you know, 6 a.m. my time. So I just move up the calendar a little bit earlier to match, you know, everyone across the pond there. Yeah.
Okay. Let's stick on this. So you've obviously got a hard work ethic, and we can see that by the book in your background.
Yeah.
What are your, for the salespeople listening to this that work a 9 to 5 and they get to the office at 5 to 9, and they leave the office at 5:01. What are your thoughts?
Good luck. And that won't last too long. You can do that. I think you could get by. I think that's where you see people who have like a great quarter, one quarter, and then like a mediocre quarter, and then followed up by a great quarter. You know, the name of the game for us is consistency, as far as like making sure, you know, you're hitting your number every month, as close to you can, if not even higher. But I really think, and this might come from my sports background, it's like my mentality is, if I work when other people are not, that stacks up every day, right? And when it comes to a month, I'm this much ahead. I've worked, you know, 4 extra days in a month compared to someone else. And that's how my mentality works. I'm not saying that's 100% correct. I know there's a big push against like hustle culture, or, you know, kind of grinding and working hard, but I'm still one of those that really, really pushes it and pushes myself, and sometimes maybe too hard, but I realize that, but that's just how I'm built, apparently.
But Shara, they only get paid 9 to 5. Why would people possibly work later if they're not being paid for it?
A mentor of mine told me something a while ago that's always stuck in my brain. It's, you have to be, if you want to level up, if you want to move up, you have to be more than just an employee. What I mean by that is, it doesn't even have to be like we're mentioning working stuff. You can be the team leader. You can be the collaboration guy. You can start a fantasy football league, be the commissioner of that, right? Like just bring people together. If you're just there to just work, and you're upset at yourself because things aren't progressing in your life of how you want it to, or you want to move up for the management position, I think it'd be very hard to find that. So I've always had the vision of moving up every single role that I've had, you know, had the plan. I see my next step, but key thing to know is that you have to master your current role before moving into that next step.
So by you doing these extra hours, it equates to you doing extra days, which means you're going to be further ahead in the holly field. Like you're walking further, so people have got to catch up with you. Where has that got you? Like, what are some of the tangibles that you've now got that people that probably started on the same path of you haven't got to because they didn't do that? What are some of the tangible examples?
You know, it's hard to tell. So really, it just comes down to what you're doing with those. I like to prospect. I'm like a big prospector. What I mean by that is, if I'm just spending more time researching a company than, you know, picking up one or two different informations here, then when I actually make the cold call, I feel more prepared. I could look at my you know, conversation to meeting percentage, I would almost bet I have the highest one on our team and probably one of the higher ones out there, you know, leveraging anywhere from like, I want to say, I got to take a look, like 30 to 40%. So when I get a conversation, I'm almost half the time or one third of the time booking that meeting because I'm prepared for the call, right? That's one. Obviously hitting my number. I've been number one rep multiple quarters in a row here in my previous job as well. So it's like, you just want to set yourself up to succeed when you do have the opportunity, whether it's doing research, prospecting, deleting accounts, right? Freeing up your calendar. So just leveling up and being ahead than other people. Yeah.
So I have strong views on research and when it comes to cold calling, because you can research, and then you might never pick up the phone and I never have a conversation with you. But enterprise sales is completely different, so that there's conversations to be had. So how do you incorporate that research into your cold call opener? What are you doing to get this 40% conversion rate? You teach me what the key takeaways.
No, to your point, you nailed it. I don't think the answer is spending 10 minutes looking up an account and then pressing dial and then no one picks up. 100%. I work for Nooks, which is a dialer. So I actually say, hey, we're going to have all the information in front of your screen. Just press dial. When you get connected, you know, you have that conversation. You know, for me, I'm reaching out to sales leaders, so it's probably going to be a little bit different than most people, right? The thing that always helps me is if they have a current job opening, which is very easy for me to tell as I get connected with someone, hey, you're currently hiring an SDR, right? Like, so that tells me they're trying to grow whatever pipeline, top of funnel. So it's just trying to find that one piece of information that gives you the biggest opening to have the most conversations, essentially. Yeah.
Okay. And Shara, obviously, like the majority of, not the majority, but a lot of like SDRs and maybe even AEs are like early 20s. Okay. We're a little bit older. How have you found that, like, when it comes to having conversations, like what positives and possibly negatives does that bring when it comes to speaking to sales leaders, having a bit of age, I guess, on your side? Call it age or experience. What are some of the pros and cons?
I think more than age, because I do understand where you're going with this. I think what you're just trying to say is like experience, or the words we're using, or understanding, or business acumen, right? Like, I think it comes down to what you're talking about when you get connected with people. And what I mean by this is, if I connect with a CEO, a VP of sales, I'm not going to ask him how many dials a day are your reps making, right? They care more about revenue, of course, or CAC, or, you know, customer acquisition costs, or things that are relevant for them. And so the clear understanding of above the line questions, below the line questions, I think is a big thing that's missing in a lot of these people who finally, after dialing, they get connected and then they drop the ball when they have the opportunity. Right. So, I think, Jack, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's kind of where you're going with like experience and age, right? Like, just you learn, I guess, the business lingo a little bit as you're in it. Yeah.
Well, keep going. What are more of those above, for anyone that's listening that is dialing CEOs, and they should be dialing CEOs because you want to aim for the top. What are some of those above the line questions that you're selling a dialer, like you say, that the CEO does not know how many dials his team are making? He might not even go on the sales floor and hear his team. So what kind of, how do you get him emotional about the problem that you solve if he's so removed from the actual solution?
Yeah, everyone could say what they want here, but for ultimately revenue, right? I just ask, you know, last two quarters, have you guys hit your goal? Are you guys projecting positive, negative? And that generally opens up the conversation a little bit. And truthfully, you know, a lot of the times they do pass you like, oh, I'm probably not the right person, but this is the person to speak with, like a warm referral from a CEO. I follow up with asking, you know, can I mention to that person that you're referring me? And that's what gets the job done almost 99% of the time there, right? Again, everyone is different. This is why I don't want to just give an answer and blanket answer. You guys have to figure out what you're solving for, the pain point that you're solving for. But most above the line leaders care about revenue at the bottom line and, you know, customer acquisition costs, things of that nature, lowering ramp time potentially, but then again, lowering ramp time to then speed up the process of the new reps hitting targets, which is tied to revenue. Almost everything is tied to revenue is what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
When it comes to sales strategy and it comes to detaching from the outcome, one of the things that you're quite good at is obviously remaining cool and calm under pressure.
Yeah.
How do you do that? What do you lean into when it comes to like mindset?
The one thing that I can say, and I've learned this, I'm actually pretty emotional when it comes to when I lose a deal and whatnot, because I've really put in a lot of time and a lot of work. So, but I've learned to somewhat detach. Okay. And how you do this is by every interaction, every call can have something that you learn from. Okay. So even a cold call, if I cold call someone and they're like, oh, I'm not the right person, but you somehow find out they're using a CRM that you integrate with, or you can confirm, hey, this is the right number, but right now they're busy. Whatever the case is, that's all positive. That's all gold. So previously I used to be like, damn, if I didn't book the meeting, it's 100% a loss, right, on a cold call. But I'm here to tell whoever's listening, that is 100% the wrong mindset. There is gold to be found in every single call that you can apply to the very next call to book the meeting, right? So just shifting that mindset, I think, helps.
Do you have anything anecdotally from people that you've spoken to, you haven't booked a meeting straight away, you've felt like you failed, and then it's later gone on to be a win anyway?
The real thing, so as a dialer, right, like when people hear about, oh, Nooks, we're a dialer, people automatically assume this whole like spray and pray motion of, hey, you just put in a list, you dial, you know, 20 people or 10 people at a time, and then one person magically picks up. So I think anecdotally, like previously, people, when I would just say dialer, they'd be like, oh, no, yeah, I already know about this. I'm good, man. Boom. So what that's helped me do now is, as I'm saying, like talking about Nooks, and I'll be like, and I bet you probably think of this as a spray and pray approach, right? And then it gives me a chance to at least, you know, they say yes. And then, hey, let me tell you why we're different, right? So kind of anticipating that objection or speaking about it before they bring it up gives you a chance to at least do a true rebuttal or more information on that. So there's been plenty of old accounts that I had called that kind of said that to me right off the bat. And so yeah, I can't think of one specifically that ended up being a win afterwards, but I just know that's a common objection that now we kind of overcome a little bit better. Yeah.
It's that accusation audit, isn't it? You want to get there before they get it. So what are some of the other, obviously we use Nooks and we love it. So what are some of the other misconceptions when it comes to, I guess when it comes to parallel dialers, not just necessarily Nooks?
Yeah. In general, like that's the biggest one, the spray and pray approach. Another one is the bridge time, right? As far as like when you do get connected with someone, the huge gap in between, whether it's, you know, 7 seconds, 10 seconds. Fun fact, and not to promo Nooks here, but 90% of our calls are bridged in half a second or less. 90%. It's insane. Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a lot of parallel dialers out there? I could probably name a handful that have bad reputations. There are a few out there that don't have bad reputations. Why are they getting such a bad reputation? People are saying, I saw a guy share something on his LinkedIn the other day saying, this is how many cold calls I've had today. Like these parallel dialers, they're just spamming us. Like what is the deal there? Why do they get such a bad rep?
Yeah, look, like not everyone, I use the analogy of like cars. Like when you have a dialer, you have a sports car, right? For your Ferrari, your Lamborghini, whatever. And then there's speed limits on the street. Not everyone drives speed limit, right? Different people have different cars. Different people have different preferences. And I know our customers definitely don't hear, but like, I'm sure there's dialers in general that you have the ability to misuse it, right? If you do want to. If you do want to just keep dialing the list over and over and over, there isn't really something that's stopping people from doing that. So it comes with some like ethical backing to as well. And you have to kind of respect it. So I'm sure there's people who are misusing the technology, which is creating that space of people being annoyed. Yeah.
Okay. And obviously you've worked at a couple of different dialers now. Like, what have you, this is like your area of expertise. Yeah. What have you learned in the years that you've been doing this, like from moving different companies and what have you learned along the way?
What I've learned along the way is the phone is the quickest way to get a yes or a no. All right. The phone goes up and down in popularity. It's back in vogue now. It's sexy again because emails aren't, working as good. But the phone has to be, in my opinion, the best orgs that I see, the phone is their strongest channel because there's a culture of dialing. There isn't call reluctance. You get the most out of your reps. And when you include a dialer in this space, it just 3-5x's their abilities. And even more important, and for your success, like the phone is where it's at. That's all I could say, especially today. That might change. But in the last like couple of years here, we all know the phone is definitely the best channel.
Do you think it will change?
I would be naive to think that it wouldn't. I mean, who knows what the future holds, right? But if you're telling me emails or phones, texting, there's way too many laws, right? Like cold texting, that's definitely illegal here. I don't know. I anticipate it changing, but as of right now, definitely phones. Yeah.
I see a world where parallel dialers and AI combine, and bots get involved and it does all the work for you. And then it schedules a call back. I think it would get so clever that because the real reason that the phone doesn't get used is because of call reluctance. Okay.
Yeah.
So people don't want to pick up the phone. Whereas I feel like there'll be a point where people won't necessarily have the call reluctance because the phone and the dialer will actually do so much of the work for you that it will only be like imagine Nux, right? And you get this filter in and it's like a pre-recorded, hey, it's Shara from Nux. I'm just giving you a call, but this is an automated message. If you want to have a conversation around this, press 1. Okay. So it's like a voicemail, but like the dialer does all the work for you. If you spam 1,000 numbers a day, you're going to get people that go, yeah, actually, that sounds interesting. Then all of a sudden, you're not just booking appointments, but you're booking phone calls. Okay, so then it gets rid of all the call reluctance. And because so many dials will be being made, then maybe the phone will die out again. But I guess what do you think the future of sales holds? Because it's changed so much over the last 20, 30 years, but psychology hasn't changed. The way human beings react to reactants and different things hasn't changed. So what do you think the future of sales brings?
Yeah, you touched on a lot of it, like definitely incorporating buzzword here, AI, and helping reps just be more efficient, honestly, even when it comes to building the lists. The one tricky part of the example that you gave is playing a pre-recorded voicemail to a live person on the other side of the phone, which is like one of the most illegal things to do currently with the laws, but that could change, right? But like in your example, that would be a great use case. I think, I don't know. There's two ways. I think it's going to be totally new, more incorporating like AI. I don't know. Rather than FaceTime, you have like something on your desk. It's a hologram. You get to interact with the person. I don't know. It's more like a visual. The flip side is, what if it goes back more old school? Like people appreciate more handwritten letters and face-to-face meetings. And I don't know, man. Whatever it is.
But salespeople are lazy, aren't they? So handwritten letters, there's a company now that will write the handwritten letters for you and it's got a robot arm. The issue is all that stuff works. I've got a good friend that does direct mail and we use it for certain campaigns. But people are lazy. People don't want to do that. They think, how can I automate 5,000 LinkedIn messages in the click of a button?
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. It's leaning more towards the efficiency gains, the new way of doing things. I'm just so excited. I know one thing though, is that I will be ready to adapt on the click of a button here. I'm ready for the change. And I think as salespeople, that's probably what holds us back generally, is like, we think we know, we think we have the best way of doing things, but we're not really open to the potential changes. But that's another thing that's potentially helped me get to where I am also, is being open to trying different things, testing different things, hearing feedback, even if it's opposite of how I like to do things, and trying it. Yeah.
And what's your viewpoint on every salesperson needs a personal brand?
Every salesperson. I don't agree with that. I think it helps. And the reason I don't agree with that is because I saw some of my best AEs, you know, number two, number three, number one in the segments, never post on LinkedIn, for example. You know, and it's like, do you really need it? No. Does it help? Hell yeah, it helps. I think I've gotten so many leads from LinkedIn and just having the conversations, but I've also seen the flip side where top performers are not on there. Yeah.
I knew an AE for Zoom Info who was smashing it, great salesperson, and they took like a year off because they were like, actually LinkedIn's a distraction. I'm building this personal brand, but it's actually getting in the way.
Yeah.
What's your like content strategy when it comes to like, what do you want to be known as when it comes to your brand?
Yeah, I still struggle with this. I think I'm there because my prospects are there. And I used to post, I've tried everything under the sun, man. I've tried the whole Venmo people 2 cents and, you know, this is my 2 cents, and horrible strategy, by the way. If anyone's thinking about doing that, do not do that. I A-B tested it twice with 50 people each time. So it's a sizable, you know, people, zero replies. So save your 2 cents and the $5 or how, whatever that ends up being. But back to the question here. So I struggle because I try, what I know best right now is like being a father and just in that world and trying to be in the sales world and a father. But I've noticed a lot of my people that I'm connected with are younger than me, SDRs, if you will, who don't have kids. So it doesn't resonate too well. So I've noticed those are my worst performing posts, if you will, not to look at vanity metrics. But what I want to be known for is just, if you're thinking about cold calling or calling in general, you need a platform, you need a dialer. I would hope I'm one of the first names that you think of. So that's my strategy. Yeah.
Good. And if your kids grow up and they say, Dad, you've inspired me, I want to go and work in sales, what would you say?
Hell yeah, let's do it. Yeah. Look, sales is amazing. And honestly, you know, I have my master's degree. I went to school. I don't think, thinking back on it, I should have done it. I think it's taught me a few things. But one, I was very young. I was 23 years old when I got my master's degree, and I couldn't apply it to my life yet. You know, like there's this school in general. I'm a big fan of school. My wife has her PhD, but I also am open to the idea of not having student loans and working in sales and making 200, 300K. It's out there. It's possible. Yeah.
Okay. And for the people that are listening to this for the first time ever, they want to get that 200, 300K. What advice would you give them?
My advice that I would give them is it's not going to happen on your first round of that first job. I think it's something that you need to work up to. I know when I joined tech, I took a step back actually, but I did so because of all the other reasons that, you know, working less weekends that you're working, less driving, working remote. Really have to take into consideration where you're at in your life and where you're trying to go. And it's okay to take a step back to then go 3x more. And that's ultimately what happened to me. Yeah.
Good. And Shara, if people want to work with you, they want to look at Nooks, they want to follow you, they want to talk to you about dialers, sales, all the good stuff. Where should they find you? What should they do?
Yeah, LinkedIn. My name is Shara Davuti. There's only one Shara Davuti in the world. I've never had a problem getting my Instagram handle, anything like that. But LinkedIn is the best way to reach me. Hopefully, Jack, we can put the link in here somewhere so it's an easy click for them when they're viewing this. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. And one last question before you go: What's the best nonfiction book that people should be reading to improve communication or mindset?
Hold on a second.
He's going to get it.
No, no. I was just looking at where it is. It's right there. It's the orange one. The sales leader. I just like that one. It's more of, it qualifies like the medic aspect of things. I think the understanding of, and I've talked about this previously, the speaking the language of your prospect and the role that they're in. I think if, when it comes to communication, if you're able to show that you at least understand their specific problems, that's going to help you build credibility and have those conversations. Yeah.
And you've got a copy of The Daily Dad behind you.
Oh yeah, you saw that too?
Yes. I bought Zach a copy for his birthday, and a friend bought me a copy for just before I became a father. So some great words of advice. Shara, love talking with you always. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, man.